Namaskar. Welcome to episode 435 of DGI. Fasten your seatbelts. You are in for a great ride. Today, Sridhar Chitalaji will be talking to us about who is really running the United States government with proof. Is it Biden or is it Soros? And if it is Soros, what are the linkages? Everything is going to come up to you. That's what we are going to start with. And then we are going to end with what is happening in the Indian Ocean area. That ship that was subjected to a missile, all that and more. So let's welcome Sridhar Chitalaji. But before that, please like this video. And if you have not already subscribed to our channel too, this is coming on channel 2. It's also coming on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook pages. So please, wherever you are, please subscribe to our channel or please like it. And we will be very, very happy. Thank you very much. And now let's welcome Sridhar Chitalaji. Sridhar ji, namaskar and welcome to P. Guru's channel.
Namaskar. Good morning to everybody. And looking forward to another exciting session.
Thank you so much, sir. We start with a bang. Who is really running the United States government? Is it George Soros or is it Joe Biden? And here is a slide deck that we want to tell you where exactly is the creep that has taken place. We know that Soros has been appointing many district attorneys. He has also been having some of his proteges or people who basically are propped up by him, who are becoming probably going to be like governors. Like, for example, in the state of California, the lieutenant governor is a handpicked Soros person. As soon as Newsom moves away, this new person will be the one who will be the chief, the governor. So I leave the floor to you, sir. I've talked too much today already. Over to you.
Great. First and foremost, I think that there has been an inquiry that is going on within the House. The documents reveal that close to $15 million has been directly funded by Soros Group into the super PAC, basically to have very influential people advocating and managing the policies of the U.S. government. In this instance, we're going to dwell on FTC, which is a very important arm which manages and governs various policies that affects digital technologies. Four names come to mind, and four names are listed. One is obviously the Soros Foundation. The second is the Omidyar Network. Third is the Ford Foundation. And fourth is another called Luminate Group. These four groups have deployed a number of people within the FTC, which basically directs the policies. And many of the people who are from these groups are now special advisors or advisors. We'll reveal some names. We'll discuss some names. There's nothing to reveal. It will be soon made public if it's not already made public. But we are just giving you the information. Lina Khan herself, who is the FTC commissioner, who has worked with an institution called Open Markets Institute itself, was funded by George Soros Group. Okay, so we start there, right at the top. So what are the kind of the other names? The other names include Sarah Miller, who led what we call American Economic Liberties Group. She was the project director. She is married to Bernie Sanders' former aide, Faiz Shakir. Now, this Sarah Miller is originally an advisor. Now she is a policymaker within the FTC commission. Then AI Now. Artificial intelligence now, which controls, manages the policies around the various technology platforms and the directives. The AI Now founder is Meredith Whittaker. Meredith Whittaker, who came in initially as an advisor, is now part of the FTC commission. And I think she initially was chief of staff for Lina Khan, now playing an active role within the administration to drive the policies. Remember, all these people are either direct, indirect funders, recipients of funding from the four groups that I mentioned. In some cases, Open Society Foundation, in some cases, Ford Foundation, in cases, Omidyar Network, etc. But the intertwist in terms of the composition of the groups from these various people is fairly evident. Now, it didn't stop there. Now, they added four more staff, Amba Kuk, Sarah Myers, Sarah Myers-West, Alexandro Calcano, Varun Mathur to advisory roles. Now they are part of the team. What has happened as a result of this is many people within FTC who are extremely competent and knowledgeable who have served have been pushed sideways. Some of them even have resigned in frustration as these people take up roles to drive not only the policy, but also influential decisions within FTC. This has been a subject of contention and dispute between the House as well as the FTC. And, you know, in the first 2 years when the House was under the Democratic control, you know, things were smothered under the bed. Now, of course, it's all kind of coming to surface in terms of the deep reach of the deep state. Now, FTC also tapped Eric Martin. Who is Eric Martin? He runs a group called Democratic Fund. It is funded by Umidyar Network. He is also now part of the group. Then it also turned to John Cuoca, who is a law professor who advised Open Market Institute. Remember, Open Market Institute is where Lina Khan came from. Now, he is also now an advisor within the group. So this is the level of tentacles of these influential groups within who have funded the Democratic Party, who are managing and controlling from inside the administration. I'm just saying this is, I mean, we'll do more, but this is within the FTC area. We'll get to Department of Defense. Already Shriji has covered the State Department, etc., to see how deep the tentacles are. But this just tells you how well orchestrated the policies are by the progressive groups, notably led by Mr. George Soros and his team, and of course, some of Bernie Sanders' people.
Sridharji, so the United States as a country is up for sale for $100 million?
It can easily be up for sale through influencers. It's called as exerting influence without authority. So you can exert influence without authority with a price that, whether it is 100, whether it is 50, whether it is 15, is up to the super PACs to decide, Shriji.
And you know, I find it very interesting that puff pieces of Lina Khan have started appearing in several websites and magazines just like last few days, about how she went to Stanford, how she went to Oakland, how she went to startup incubator companies in San Francisco. So clearly they know that this is coming down the pipeline, and therefore there is always this counterbalancing. You also notice, Sridharji, about how they have decided that the Harvard president shall not go, and how they have really, you know, made the board of Harvard to band up together and say that Claudine Gay is not resigning because unanimously we support her. Doesn't matter that her research is flawed. Doesn't matter that her judgment is flawed. Doesn't matter. I can just go on. So there is the stand. Harvard appears to be the citadel that they want to guard at all costs. I know I'm changing topics a little bit here, but it just shows you how woke and wokeism has completely captured the levers of power in America. And we are going to reveal some more things and in course of this Global Insights episode that will actually, you know, chill your spine. Just stay along. And if you have not liked this video, please do so, because, again, this is first time things are being presented to you in such a cogent manner. Over to you, Sridharji. Shall we go to the next slide?
Yeah, just one last point on Claudine Gay. Yes, it sir. Is now it's now public that over 40 papers at least that she has published is plagiarized. I repeat, plagiarized, at least. Okay, but Harvard doesn't care. Plagiarism is a crime, is you know, within the academic parlance. But of course, when you are running a woke, deeply woke agenda, and you use a combination of minority and other kinds of factors, then you're willing to you know, put the institution to marginality and compromise, notwithstanding the fact some of these things are against the principles and etiquette of an institution.
Yes, indeed. Some of the judgments being handed over, rulings being handed over, everything smacks of nepotism. Anyway, we have talked about this before, about how things happened in Georgia way back in 2021, when the thing was on the needle's edge about who's going to be leading Senate. So you have to cast your mind back to some of the earlier episodes of Global Insight, where we shone the torch on how a certain group was making sure everything fell their way. Also, please read my book, Who Painted My State Purple? It's a research that has come out of Sridharji's and my work. And I'm just merely stringing the pearls. Sridharji was the one who helped me look at various places to come up with the story. It's a fascinating, absorbing story. If US doesn't learn from its mistakes, it will commit them again and again. As we are going to see who peddled in 2022 election in just a moment from now. Over to you, Sridharji.
Right. I think that the whole construct of this first segment of this episode is how deep is the decay in the United States political, economic, judicial, and governance system, right? And it has hit all the tentacles of power. So next is around the political. Again, it has taken what we call as very clear woke and non-woke lines. This Colorado decision is even being objected to by the Californian governor. He says it's a laughing matter that Colorado has decided on a 4-3, pretty much on party lines, a judgment not to have President Trump on the electoral rolls. It is a slippery slope. Once you start, it's only a matter of time before the Republicans say in all red states, we will not have Joe Biden. Already three states Republicans are targeting, the battleground states, where do not want to have Biden in the electoral rolls. So it is what you want to do is you want to make sure that people exercise their franchise, and at the polls, at the booths, you make the decision. If there is anything criminal, the criminal prosecution must occur. You cannot preempt and judge that a prosecution has occurred before you make a decision and judgment around who is on the rolls and who is not on the rolls. They're using a loose 14th Amendment within the Constitution to use this, which has been both sides of the fence. Democrats and Republicans are unilaterally stating that this is not an acceptable outcome from Colorado.
Next one, please. Law and order. Sir, yesterday, I think there was a shooting spree in a Florida mall, and I think the suspect is still at large.
Escaped. He's gone. Suspect is at large, and he's escaped. So these incidents from coast to coast, if you start in California, and then, you know, you go through middle states, and you come to the... So it seems to be an orchestrated sequence of events, uncorrelated as they may be. There was also over the weekend the vandalization in California of the Swaminarayan temple, which India has taken strong objections to. Another reflection of the law and order not in place. Now it's an accepted norm within United States. If people come and steal $50, $100, $200, $500 worth of goods from your shops, the police won't take up the case because it is too small, and it has to be a threshold level minimum of $1,000 and above. This is the state of law and order and enforcement right across, be it shootings, be it crime, be it vandalization, be it robberies. We also had over the weekend in the Lululemon store, a truck ramming into the store basically to come in and pick up all the clothes and go. We don't know what's going to happen. If you recall, we covered in DGI, there was this incident again in downtown San Francisco where a homeless man was trying to beat up a business guy, John Camigliani. And that verdict has been announced. Believe it or not, the verdict is the homeless man who beat the guy with the metal rod, skull fractured, jaw broken, still recovering in the hospital, is released on act of self-defense. Released on act of self-defense based on the video.
Sridharji, I have firsthand information about how people are getting away with ramming their trucks into stores. And then taking the merchandise away in the middle of the night, and the police doesn't do anything. And the amount of damage is much more than $1,000, sir. It's almost like, you know, if you want to defend yourself, get a gun. That sort of attitude is prevailing. But then if you are in the, if it happens in the middle of the night, how is one supposed to defend oneself? It's getting really, really bad. I don't know where things are going to end. Mr. Gavin Newsom is equally responsible. Also, Sridharji, in this case of Swaminarayan Temple, I guess they'll say that there is no crime because the aerosol can of spray probably is just $10 or $20. He just used that to go and spray everywhere. Sir, July 2nd, the consulate building of India in San Francisco was set on fire. And the miscreants captured it on video to claim that we can do whatever we want. And this has still not been solved. They have not still caught the culprits. 2 a.m. in the morning. Sir, there are so many ways you can catch this thing. At 2 a.m., there's hardly any cell phone activity. Just by looking at the cell phone activity of the carriers, they could have found out which person was actually running away from that location at that point of time at night. And they could have easily apprehended these suspects. I'm a techie guy, and I am going to tell the SFPD and the FBI, what are you guys? Tech challenged? How do you hope to save the country, safeguard the country? This is how you behave. Anyway, this is my big long-term grouse. Also, Sridharji, I must tell you, San Jose has got control over this referendum that these people want. This Pannu, this borderline lunatic, wants to have a referendum in San Francisco. They have put up posters all over San Jose. San Jose has actually removed all of them, taken them all down. But they are all over Fremont. Fremont has not done it. Fremont is where Mr. Ro Khanna is the representative. That is where Aisha Wahab, the state senator, and these two, Ro Khanna has actually condemned the incident, but Aisha Wahab is keeping quiet. Everybody else, every assemblyman around this area has condemned this incident except Aisha Wahab. By the way, there's a recall process going on. Who knows? She might be out of a job by November 2024, because that is what is needed. Some of these people don't know anything, don't know their, anyway, elbow from you know where it is, and they start becoming your legislators. This is what happens. It's a slap in the face of many of the Indian Americans, someone who felt Aisha Wahab would be a good senator. Really, really, I'm so disappointed. Next one, please. Government audits. The National Institutes of Health fails to ensure that foreign grant recipients completed and submitted required audit report. Sir, is this the fallout of the COVID grants and other things, sir?
This is not just COVID grants alone, but this is a number of grants that is given under this whole program of research, health research, which is on field to various international groups. So it's very evident that none. I mean, I think 109 reports were sought based on the last data. Over 82 yet to be received, despite reminders. Now, these things don't go to people who get 100,000, 200,000, 500,000. They all go to people who have received at least 750,000. At least, this is the threshold limit. So you are entering an area where much of these funds that has been granted, is it being abused? And there is no, this is an audit, you know, internal audit general report from US government. So what's the enforcement? There's no enforcement. This goes back to the earlier point that Sri was alluding to, which is namely, you know, law, you know, the legal process is about documentation of evidence, collecting on field the prosecutory material, and then preparing a case from an enforcement point of view with the appropriate authority. Right through the DGI since 2021, we have been saying one group after the other was slowly being dismantled, saying it is not required. It's not required. So effectively, the tools that are much needed from an enforcement point of view seems to be dissipating right across, be it dealing with a law and order locally or be it with audit requirements when funds are granted to various bodies where they're supposed to be compliant, Sriji.
Thank you, sir. And let's go to the next slide, please. Election and political advocacy. U.S. Cyber Command Director General Paul Nakasone has testified to the House that China, Russia, and Iran all sought to meddle in the 2022 U.S. elections. Sridharji, this is my utter surprise. You know, the Republicans also appear to have not learned from their lessons of the 2022 debacle, sir. In 2020 debacle, I must say. Because in 2022, whatever played out in 2020 played out to a district level. Like, for example, you take that Arizona, right? The areas in and around Phoenix. What, Maricopa County?
Correct.
And we had people submitting saying that, look, people Xeroxed, made copies of a ballot, and then passed off as two votes instead of one, and both got counted. There was not even a nominal check to see, hey, listen, the scanned code is coming up the same. It can't be having the same scan code for two ballots.
Sriji, I just want to reaffirm to all our viewers that this is bipartisan. This is not Republican or this is not Democrat. Both of them are afraid their political agenda is being hijacked. Remember that both Democrats and Republicans are absolutely aligned both on Iran as well as on Russia as well as on China's interference and influence, right? So, but there is the periphery which continues to leverage these people. So what this, let's take for example, Iran. I mean, the arms of Iran is very deep and they've been using advocacy groups and they've been setting up what you call this recommendation bodies within the world of the internet who send influential kind of opinions to the voters. Now, remember, which is the regulatory body which is supposed to oversee this? FTC. FTC is the body. Okay. So there was no cyber command. Now, United States has a cyber command and Paul Nakasone has indicated that there were several attempts that were made and how much went through and how much we don't know as yet. But Iran's policy is two. One is around pro-Palestinian, okay, to influence pro-Palestinian agenda around the 2022, as well as to push its own kind of agenda and to ask people to vote the progressive in the 2022 elections. If you take a careful look, we covered this again in DGI, how the U.S. House elections was close and surprise results and not more than 20 seats separated the House, Republicans and the Democrats, eventually Republicans, you know, winning by a slender margin. So you can see the Iranian influence based on the cyber command report. Now, as far as the Chinese are concerned, Chinese don't want any semblance of the Republicans, but they also targeted some Democrats who sit in the bipartisan committee who say that the China is the biggest threat. So they try to steer people in the elections towards the Democrats.
You know, one name that comes to my mind, Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy. He sits on the some of the influential committees. He was part of the group that flew with Nancy Pelosi to Taiwan when China said, you shall not come. And he was targeted. He was targeted saying that this guy is a BJP supporter, that he's a Hindu guy, he's an Islamophobe. All sorts of nonsense was thrown at him. And he prevailed. It's a different matter. But you can see clearly, even though he's a Democrat, he's a hand-picked. He's a mentee of Barack Obama. He worked in Barack Obama's team when Barack Obama was just a first-term senator or even before that. And still couldn't escape. So I don't know what his mentor was doing. Barack Obama could have told, you know, go easy on Raja. No, they didn't. They went hard at him. So these things are happening. In fact, there was an interview of his that I did that aired yesterday morning. Do watch it, viewers. A lot of information. He's also done good work that will help immigrants such as Indian Americans. So do watch that video if you have not already done so. Now, Sridharji, this is why we keep saying, again, this is my head telling me, even though heart says that Republicans are coming back to the White House in 2024, the head keeps saying, watch out. There may be still surprises in store. They don't need to rig the entire 50 states. Read my book, Who Painted My State Purple? There are only a few that you need to flip one way or the other, and that's it. Everything else is done and dusted. That's what's going to happen. Next slide, please.
Before we, just one concluding thought on that book.
Yes, sir.
By the way, not in this, but maybe in next one of the next 2-3 episodes, we'll reveal there's a research conducted on the 2020 elections. Research conducted. The number ranges from 40 to 60% of the voters who voted now reveal that there was fraud and their votes were fraudulent. And some of the votes cast were fraudulent. But it is smothered under the carpet, basically, because the 2020 election cases are being contested. But the research that has been done points to, by the voters who voted in the 2020 elections, and therefore the Republican and Trump position stands vindicated if ever that research report is taken and some kind of judicial process or a House inquiry process is initiated to say what exactly happened. Sriji.
Thank you, sir. And we have some time today. I want to dwell a little bit in depth into this particular aspect that you said, sir. Viewers, you might wonder, Trump was in power for 4 years. How come he could not bring in changes? There were lots of roadblocks put in front of him. For example, he had to go and start a new investigative agency called the DNI. Sir, was DNI created by Trump or was it given teeth by Trump?
It was given teeth by Trump. It was not, it was given teeth by Trump. Many of these departments exist, but they have become dormant because they don't become part of the policy as well as active engagement process, Sriji.
Now, see, everybody starts saying that, CIA has said there was no election interference. FBI has said that there is no election interference in 2020. How come nobody likes to quote DNI? Then I said there is strong chance that there was interference. See, this is one-sided narrative that the Democrats have taken. Also, you need to look at the role of a certain person called Deborah Williams. This person, she was the head of Democratic chair, I think DNC committee, right? She was what was she, sir? Yeah. You have to look at her role. Her relatives, they should have recused themselves from ruling on some of the more critical judgments. This is what is done in the United States. And they did not, because they wanted the outcome to go a certain way. I can say that, you know, these things happen in elections, but too jarring is all I can say. Sridharji, DNI, why was that not highlighted, sir, in your opinion?
Well, basically, because if you recall, we played part snippets of the video. There was a completely choreographed story on, around the January 6th. You had Jim Jordan's plea to kind of even hear him was not on January 6th, was not, granted permission. And you had a choreographed kind of a version coming from the various people. You know, it's an insurrection, it's an insurrection, it's an insurrection, it's an insurrection. You know, it's like a choreographed. You can see in that video that was tabled, right from the House, the Senate, the media, to the various groups, you know, the same. It's almost like a choreographed story that played out. And, as far as the full video is concerned, probably very few people have access to the full video as to what happened on January 6th and to correlate it to DNI kind of findings, because Mr. Johnson has basically said, we don't have the, you know, we only kept what was required. My office and the support staff of the committee, they're not mandated or warranted to keep the full video. This is how this has played out, Sriji.
And you know, insurrection, the word insurrection is not something that you throw about in our daily conversations. And yet, to a senator, to a congressman of a certain party, everybody started chanting the same word. How did this word occur to, how did this thought occur to all of you, all of a sudden, all at the same time, guys? Can't you explain that, Madam Pelosi? Anyway, we can leave it at that. Next, go to the next one. United States Indo-Pacific Command the Indo-Pacific Command sidesteps legally mandated headquarters. Is there a little bit more context, and could you please unpack this for us?
Yeah, I will. I will. As part of the National Defense Authorization Act of 2024, again, we covered this in one of the DGIs, $875 billion of budget was approved, 6% increase over the 2023, bipartisan between Democrats and Republicans. The budget was approved. And when the budget was approved by the Congress, they had stipulated to the Pentagon to establish a joint Indo-Pacific Command headquarters, and this will have an operational oversight and to be ready by October 2024. That was the condition attached to the release of the budget. Okay, condition attached to the release, and to report to the House committee on the progress of Pentagon. Why? They clearly believe that China was an imminent and clear threat, and hence a joint command was needed. I'll just digress for 1 minute here. Remember, this was being insisted during the Afghan withdrawal, whether there is a clear process in place and who is responsible for managing end-to-end the withdrawal. Two senators, one Massachusetts and one, I can't remember the state, two of them, House representatives, said that they visited and they found that this thing, this joint management process was not established in the Afghan, and what followed was a disaster. So they want to avoid this. They recognize a clear and imminent. What does the Pentagon and Department of Defense say? No, we don't believe that China is an imminent threat. We don't believe that they're going to pose problems to us. So they have been effectively non-compliant with the mandate as far as the budget is concerned. Now, what is a joint operational command? Joint operational command brings together Army, Navy, Marine, Air Force, and also some of the foreign military service forces into one unified command from a coordinated management in the event of a threat. So it's a very clear kind of a process which brings together these various groups so that there is a cohesive process to manage both defense and offense in the event of a threat, be it in Indian Ocean, be it in the Pacific, be it in the South China Sea, and be it in the invasion of Taiwan. What has happened? We haven't touched. We'll cover the Department of Defense and the other areas. They have been sidestepping it. On the contrary, they have established a small group in Guam, of all places, of Guam, to basically manage this. So this is another example of how ill-prepared United States is in deterrence in the Indo-Pacific. Now, we are already witnessing what's happening in the Mediterranean.
Yes, indeed. And we'll come back, circle back to this Afghanistan episode in just a few minutes as we finish up our slide deck. There's another slide that we need to look at, very, very important one. Can we go to the next slide, please? India stories. India's forex reserves rise for the fifth straight week, reaching an over 20-month high of $616 billion as of 15th of December. Sridharji, this is a stellar achievement because India now is not spending its hard-earned dollars on crude.
Well, I think that this is a tremendous. This is also not a question, not just merely a question of holding the. See, there are two components. One is spending the reserves. Second is adding to the reserves. Now, the splendid management of the offsets from the energy imports is through minimized usage of US dollars has helped stemming the outflow. That's one. Second, India has also received, because as the leading emerging market, somewhere close to $14 to $15 billion of new capital over a period into the reserves, so pushing it to the $615 billion mark. And again, in DGI, we covered this. Our belief is that India will hit somewhere between 750 to $1 trillion as it marches towards the $5 billion economy. So it is on that specific gradient in terms of...
I think even $5 trillion, sir.
Yeah, $5 trillion. No, the reserves to be $750 billion to about $1 trillion. So right now, India is just less shy of $4 trillion in terms of its, I think it's $3.8 trillion economy. So it's very much on the margin, very much in trajectory to reach its. The reserves are a very critical component in terms of giving strength and robustness in terms of how it manages the stability of its capital markets and liquidity positions to meet this import-export requirement, Sriji.
And in the, the Houthis acting against vessels on the Indian Ocean, Israel-affiliated merchant vessel was hit by unmanned aerial vehicle in Arabian Sea off of India's west coast, closer to Mangaluru, and looks like the damage has been contained. There is no spill or anything of that nature. The question here is, where was the missile set off from? Was it Iran or was it from Yemen? This is a question that is being asked because that would tell us how much range these missiles have. And secondly, where was the origin? That would tell us whose hand was in. Sridharji, any updates on this?
Well, I think slowly but steadily, the information is trickling out. It's very clearly from Yemen. The surrogates are Houthi, but United States has stepped up and said, it's very clear there is direct involvement of Iranians in the launch and the attack of the Indian vessel, which was ferrying, not India-bound vessel, let me correct, India-bound vessel, but it's an Israeli container, but the ship itself was Liberian. Was the target. The fuel was the target, basically sending a warning to the so-called the friends of India, which is Iranians. But the belief is that based on the US report, it's Iranian, only implies, based on unconfirmed reports, has the Iranian Republican Guard now been dispersed to various parts, Lebanon, Yemen, the areas of Hamas, Palestine, because the type of attacks, the type of instruments and the type of defense machinery that is being used, it cannot be a razzmatazz terrorist organization. There is very close covert involvement, direct involvement of Iran. And usually the arm that does that is the Iranian
Republican Guard.
So there is a growing suspicion that the IRG is very active, whether they are being indirectly and directly being encouraged by China, because China wants to make sure that there is enough trouble in the Mediterranean, so that, already we covered the Indo-Pacific command, so the South China Sea is left free pursue its other kind of aggressive actions there. So the reports trickling in says now it's not the so-called Houthis. They're not capable. It is the level of sophistication of equipment. They're not just launching rockets. They're launching very sophisticated drones targeting ships and other types of vessels in the Mediterranean. And it's time United States comes together with the so-called joint force with 29 nations to guard the Mediterranean. The whole circumnavigation of the globe is not the solution. And I think India also must bring forth its navy. I mean, in the end, we will show you a map as to why the India-Oman strategic partnership is very critical and very important with security in mind when you look at the map.
Yes, indeed. And I think that brings us to a close of the slide deck portion. We have some maps to share. Oh, there's one more. I'm sorry. France. So this is a new development. There was talk about how Biden had called off his visit to India. Again, you have to go back and look at, who in the Department of State have animus towards India to give you an idea of who's also planting. We're not having specific names. I'm not saying that this particular individual walked this file from this division to this division, and therefore, we can't go to that kind of granularity, but there is a mindset. And the mindset is coming from the group that is lobbying. You see, and that's all we can tell you, that this group, this is the lobbyer, This is the person who has got funding into that, and that's how these things happen. Only thing is, now with social media, a lot of the truths buried under that everybody knew in the beltway but didn't say is now coming out, because, you know, that is what is social media. Sir, this is a real surprise that Macron has accepted India's invitation. By the way, for those of you who may not know this, India never sent an invitation to Biden. It was never an official invitation. So as to why he said that he's not coming for the Republic Day parade, for which he was not even given an official invitation, only Sridhar Ji can explain.
Well, I think there's a lot of advocacy. I mean, we have covered, there is a coherent and consistent message to see how Indian influence can be undermined. There are pro-India groups, there are anti-India groups within the Biden administration. As far as the House is concerned, you have seen bipartisan people visit India, and they see clearly India as a deterrence. A number of agreements have been signed. But having said that, there are always, periphery within the administration, you know, which can, especially when what we said today on FTC is an indication of what is happening in the other groups, then you can, George Soros, Pierre Omidyar, Ford Foundation, they're not great friends of India either. Okay, so they are very, very active within the tentacles of the government body. Coming back to France, it's very interesting that two incidents almost happened adjacent to each other. The first is, the French president accepted the invitation and tweeted that he is very happy to be with his friend, Prime Minister Modi, on the Republic Day, and he's very much looking forward to it. And he said he has confirmed his attendance to be at the event. Very prominent, very important. I'll give you a concluding thought on that in a second. Around the same day, on a tip-off from who, we don't know, that there is a chartered flight from Dubai, which was making its way to the Nicaraguan capital, was grounded in the port of Vatry, which is about 150 miles of east of 150 miles of Paris, saying that there's a human trafficking, and people are mostly of Indian origin, including minors sitting on the plane. They're all going to Nicaragua with an intent that most of them will illegally try to cross the border into United States and Canada. Surprise, US and Canada again getting featured. Remember, US Canada gets featured on many of these other issues that we have been alluding to. So there is so this plane is now grounded. It's a Romanian flight. I think the name of the plane, I don't remember the...
It's a chartered company, yes. Legend Airlines.
And basically the lawyer from the Legend said, we have done nothing wrong. We looked at the thing, and if they want to, file a case, we are ready to fight the case. That's what they have stated. So as we speak, the process in France is that whenever you have this human trafficking kind of an issue, they have the ability to stall. Two judges are now interviewing the various passengers in the flight that will go on. They have ability to do extension of 8 days and 8 days to detain these people with full facilities being provided. Consular access has been granted, and India has acknowledged consular access. But you can kind of, I don't know whether these people were deliberately lured, that they've been offered jobs. All this will come out, but it's very interesting, this French president accepting and this incident occurring. So obviously somebody knows, whether it is coincidental or whether it is non-coincidental, we don't know, but it's very interesting. Now, with regard to the French president, there is also, if you recall, we covered last week the visit of external affairs ministers to Russia. Very clearly that there is some kind of thinking that is going on within the Indian setup, whether they should have India and France and Russia as potential backup, because India has got a very extensive defense program where various, from engines to supply parts, they are reliant on United States to shore up its defense production and be prepared. So whether France, which has been a very, very strong and what we call as a supporter, and in terms of the defense procurement, both the US, both France and Russia, of course Israel is more the ammunition, So I think that there is also a growing feeling that this is they have to strengthen their relationship with France as well as with Russia. Italy may join this group. This is what we had also indicated with a new Italian prime minister. So some interesting developments within the context of it's just not a mere invitation. There's a strategic agenda behind it.
Sridharji, what happened to the crystal blade technology, the GE engine that was supposed to go to India? Now I'm hearing that India is actually going to get those things from Safran, including perhaps a technology transfer, and India will be able to manufacture these engines in India. Isn't that a big loss of jobs for the United States?
So in the political strata, you just need to stall to create an uncertainty. Eventually, these programs will happen because significant amount of business opportunity is lost to these defense companies. They will push their barrel very hard through their advocacy groups. Doesn't matter whether a Democrat or a Republican is sitting in power, to make sure that their earnings are not impacted. You know, the lobby groups of the healthcare companies, the defense companies, and the energy companies are most powerful as the political advocacy groups, Sriji.
Thank you, sir. And again, one more topic. Sir, just around the time that Modi had visited for the state visit, a little bit before, a little bit after, there was an announcement that Air India and IndiGo were each going to buy 500 planes of various types from both Boeing and Airbus. So India looked like it was straddling down a middle path where they were saying that, okay, we will give opportunities to both these people. Air India needs a new fleet, and IndiGo is growing fast in India. So IndiGo is the southwest of India, if you will, viewers. So for those of you who don't know, IndiGo is a difficult flight experience, but it takes you on time. That's a big deal in India. So that's why everybody grits their teeth and flies IndiGo. They're very difficult to deal with. You have 1 kilo excess baggage, they'll fleece you. That's the way it is. So they want you to basically live off of air and water. Even water, they'll think about giving. But at the same time, they'll take you on time. That's a takeaway there. But 500 and 500 was initially the orders that was talked about. Yet, when we found out finally, it was, you know, IndiGo completely bought from Airbus, sir. The Boeing segment was gone. Only Air India is buying from Boeing. What happened there, do you think, sir?
It is the ability to, Boeing is overstretched. Its ability to meet the orders, very stringent penalties. I think I don't know. I'm just basically indicating to you the specific guidelines and what makes some of these commercial airlines switch from one to the other. You know, it's also competitive. Air India and IndiGo compete. So they don't want to put all eggs in one basket and to see that, you know, orders tilt one way versus the other way. So IndiGo probably chose the right approach to say, which is, hey, you know, I think you're overburdened. So in case something happens, I'm competitively disadvantaged. So let me go to the other. So all this boils down to very strong conditions that is stipulated into the contracts. As far as Boeing is concerned, it's fully booked. And they're very happy with the order that they received from India. And once the contract is signed, there's no mechanism politically or otherwise to unwind that contract, Sriji.
Thank you so much, sir. And I think you have a few slides to share. Oh, there is one more. Sorry about that. I keep thinking that's the last slide. Israel, the import of the conversation between Biden and Netanyahu appears to be that US is saying, go ahead and do what you have to. That is how I read it, sir. Please tell me if it was correct or not.
He basically said that he did not speak about ceasefire. So draw your own conclusions. He said the conversations are confidential. I never touched ceasefire with Benjamin Netanyahu. And both sides seems to be happy with where they left off or unhappy with where they left off. But very clear, Biden has said, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to comment. But ceasefire was not one of the agenda items.
So Iran is threatening the whole Mediterranean now over the attacks. This there's also talk about what transpired when we talked about this in the previous episode also. Pakistan's defense minister was visiting US. Before that, the real rulers of Pakistan, General Asim Munir and Lieutenant General Nadeem Anjum were there. a little birdie is telling me, sir, that US might come back into this region again, establish a base in Balochistan, perhaps.
Each one of us have different sources and different, pieces of information. Based on what I am hearing is that coming into Balochistan is probably not feasible or is not something that I have heard. Remember that within Balochistan that there is a lot of Chinese effort as part of the Belt Road Initiative. There is a significant amount of debt that Pakistan has taken, giving guarantees in terms of access. Many Chinese, either security as well as staff who have been involved have lost lives occasionally as a result of the explosions. So certainly I'm not hearing the news that there is a base contemplated in Balochistan. I've also heard rumors that there is a base they're trying to establish, which they're negotiating with Qatar and Taliban in Afghanistan. I think that also is not going to happen. Based on all the stuff that we have just shared with you in terms of the basic thing of establishing an Indo-Pacific command. The question now is how deeply operational US is stretched to the thin, both in Mediterranean, Atlantic with the Ukraine-Russia war, and then in South China Sea and on the Pacific coast. So, there's much larger questions here, Sriji, and also the operational capability of the U.S. Army in terms of the deployments and orchestration. There is no command. There's no command center other than the existing CENTCOM and Northern Command. There's no command center. So I don't know how one can kind of say, oh, there's a base going to be established in some part in the part of the world, when you really have chain of command and operational issues, Sriji. That's just my observation. I could be wrong. I may be wrong. Maybe I'm not privy to that information, but that's my observation.
Sir, again, you correctly pointed out that we have various sources of information. So this was my source, and I could be wrong also. Also, there is this unending question. What about Imran Khan? The United States waves a wand and things start happening in Pakistan. We know that Pakistan is completely bankrupt. Even China has washed its hands off of aiding Pakistan. It is only US, IMF. These are the ones who are still keeping it afloat. And I don't know what they are thinking about, what US is thinking about, what to do with Imran Khan. They thought that if he's imprisoned, that and if you conduct elections, it will be easy for the other side to come to power. We don't know where things are. And we'll keep you posted, because This 15th August 2021, and the dawn, at the crack of dawn, the troops left Afghanistan completely, just, you know, like overnight, without even informing the Afghans. That kind of tells you that, you know, what exactly happened? Whose bright idea was it to leave like that? Because Bagram is now, sir, there was an ambush in Rajouri 2 days ago, and they were having armor penetrating bullets, and the machine guns used were American M4. No guesses as to where they would have come from. Bagram.
Well, I think, again, we covered this in DGI, and much of the analysts had covered this as well, which is namely, where is the stolen planes and stolen equipment and stolen machinery as well as the armory going to go? Is going to go to Pakistan, because the reason is Pakistan gave unilateral guarantee and it moved its army, including the northern frontier. It was Pakistani army, and it's also Pakistani planes involved in the final snuff out of the Afghan resistance. So one can draw one's conclusions as a result of what transpired there and what is flowing out of it. As far as this, I don't know about this. I think that there is a tacit support to the army from the U.S. administration. Again, U.S. you know, just like Indians would like to have influencers within the administration, it's natural to say every country is entitled to have influencers within the administration. Pakistan is no exception because it felt that for 4 years it got cold shoulders from President Trump. So it has made its efforts to make sure that it has got influencers within the administration. So clearly the army is the controlling body within Pakistan. Doesn't matter which arm of the government, whether it is political or judiciary or administration. So my view is that the will of the army will prevail, and you will see continuing to play, whether Imran Khan goes to jail or whether he is outside. The army will decide whether Nawaz Sharif becomes the prime minister or whether he is not. That will also, army will make the decision. And basically, that's the negotiating arm with the U.S. So that has been the case for 40, 50 years right now, Sriji.
Yes, indeed, sir. You have a couple of maps for your discussion. We can put those maps up whenever you want to talk about it, sir.
Yeah. Great. Okay. If you recall, I was just trying to wave my hand and talk about the map, the strategic importance of that. Now, if you see the Red Sea, which is a gateway from all the way Israel. You know, you see a small aperture, Israel, Jordan. You know, that is the canal that leads into Red Sea, which is very critical from a trade point of view. Going through Red Sea, past Eritrea, past Yemen, into the Arabian Sea. So this is the plot that you know, the ship, the Indian the India bound ship was going, and this is the path that many what you call containers take as they ferry the oil from be it Saudi Arabia, be it Egypt, etc. So Yemen is at the pivot. So, and where is Yemen and where is Iran? Please take a look at the map. And you can see, if somebody says, you know, this razzmatazz Houthis are basically responsible for operating very sophisticated drones and rocket-propelled, missiles and rocket launchers, etc., you know, one is fooling itself. So at least United States has come out and said the Yemenis launches, Iran is directly involved. Iran directly involved points to the finger, it's the IRG, okay? So that's the strategic importance of this specific map. Now, remember in last DGI, I covered that India did a strategic partnership with Oman, and it also did a deal with Qatar. You can see where Qatar is relative to Yemen and the strategic importance of the previous slide. Yeah, the strategic importance of Oman within the context of what India is trying to protect, not only in Arabian Sea, but also in the Indian Ocean gateway. Okay, so this is why this map is very important. And India has also strategic partnership with United Arab Emirates, which is in the Persian Gulf. Now, the next map. Okay, now we expanded the Persian Gulf and look at Bahrain. It's very important to look at Bahrain. Bahrain is where the Fifth Fleet of United States is. And that's where the initial forces are coming in, initial naval ships are coming in off the Fifth Fleet to guard the Red Sea within the context. But it is slow trickling in. At least United States has realized it is direct and tacit involvement of Iran, which means the various groups that we kind of alluded to. So Bahrain is important, Oman is important, and Yemen, which is sitting at the pivot, is equally strategic importance to Iran in terms of throttling the international navigation. And lo and behold, not too long ago, there was the Yemenis fighting and launching missiles into Saudi Arabia. They're very quiet. They're not launching missiles now into Saudi Arabia, targeting those oil installations, which is in the Bahrainian coast.
Thank you very much, sir. And let's have a few questions. Sridharji, we have a few questions from our viewers. I know it's running now 59 minutes, but I think we should just finish this thing by perhaps taking... There are three questions, sir, if you don't mind. Can we have the first question, please? Sridharji?
Vivek Ramaswamy's campaign has been pretty aggressive, pretty forceful, but it's a reflection of political new entrant, he could turn up or he could end up as a support candidate to one of the presidential nominees. And at the moment, Nikki Haley is only 4 points away from President Trump. She has done extremely well in both Iowa and New Hampshire, and a lot of money is pouring into Nikki Haley.
Next one, please. Partha wants to know, the last base realignment and closure commission was held in 2005. Is another one needed for, can it help in lowering, diverting military expenditure?
No, I think that commission is done in 2005. Another one, another one is needed if you have to lower and redirect the military expenditure. The National Defense Enhancement, the National Defense Authorization Program is one example of that, which was a bipartisan Democratic and Republican. The budget, significant, I think 7% budget approval was done with a very specific caveat attached to it, and that is establishing the joint command, a separate joint command operation, joint operational command to be kind of to be established. It enhances and directs expenditure for specific purpose. We can give you all details if you want the scope of that $880 billion probably in one of the DGI episodes.
Thank you so much, sir. Last question now. Raghunandan wants to know, Indian Navy is capable of controlling IOR and USA forces are woke and afraid of body bags coming to home. Your view on it?
Is Indian Navy capable? I think Indian Navy is extremely capable. It is, it has got now over the last, especially 5 years, it has got multiple capabilities, both sourced from France and sourced from Russia and most importantly, United States and Israel. Be it drones, be it surveillance, the submarine capabilities, be it new planes that they are indigenously manufacturing. I'm also told that there is a program underway to have these mini submarines to be launched from within the large carriers, which can both attack and choke other submarines. So I think India is now a very fully or nearly fully functional army with a vast array of capabilities. It has also established a space force. Now, I think the Navy is also capable of launching BrahMos missiles from its naval carriers. So I think it is it's capable. But I am a geopolitics and economic analyst, but defense analysts can give me a better opinion. But my view is that they seem to be, at least in a strategic context, capable, Sriji.
Thank you, sir. And I think we have that's all today. And viewers, please like, share, and subscribe to our channel. And if you have not heard about Channel 2, this is the one that focuses on US-related events. And that's been our endeavor to give you that news completely around US. This is what has been on Channel 2. And you can always show your appreciation by going down to, if you're, say, watching it on your smartphone, if you go down to the right bottom corner, you'll see a dollar sign, and that gives you two or three ways in which you can show your appreciation. So with that, we will conclude today's session. We'll be back again on Tuesday. Sridharji, I tip my hat to you, sir. You've worked for probably 3 days nonstop to try and get all these information. Viewers, you remember that this is the first place where you are going to find this thing. Maybe MSM will pick it up, but we have put in a lot of effort. We have to cross-check and double-check and make sure that these are the news items that are doing the rounds. So again, thank you all for your support. Do express by way of comments what you think. And we will have a shorter program, but today there were so many things, so many angles to be covered. Went on to a little bit longer. Thank you very much, Sridharji. Namaskar.
Namaskar. Thank you so much and have a wonderful weekend.